Greetings once again. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, we're back. It's the show that you've been waiting for, the one that doesn't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have you aboard this week as we tumble headlong into a brand new year, 2015. Welcome, everybody. And if you haven't made it yet, we'll welcome you on the other side. Hopefully you have made it. We barely made it here at the McBurney compound. Yeah, we've had to put the house up for sale. You know what that's like. Just a nightmare. Saturday afternoon felt like I was Joe Frazier after going 15 rounds against Ali. But we got it done. Got the house under contract. The incredibly shrinking studio has been, soundproofed again in a field expedient manner. So please forgive any audio glitches that you might hear. Joined in studio, as usual, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Yes, we've officially joined the ranks of the homeless. We welcome anything anyone can send. We spent Sunday afternoon making up cardboard signs for the girls. We're going to go stand at the off-ramp of 225 and Parker Road up there with all of the other homeless up there and see if we can figure out a way to get through this. I think 15,000 American families become homeless every day.
Really?
No, I just made that up. Yeah. If they do, they're like us. It's just that they sold their house and they haven't bought one yet. They haven't found one. We haven't found a house yet, so don't know where the McBurney compound will relocate to. It's not proper to end a sentence in a preposition, but there you have it. We don't know where we're going to go to, because ain't nobody selling nothing that we want. They ain't selling nothing, as we used to say back in Buffalo. But we're glad to have you aboard, and there is actually a ton of news this week. Oh, not that I've paid attention to any of it, because I've been wrapped up in my own life and the life of the entire McBurney clan here. But for the sake of you people, I went ahead and did look at some news. And we want to start with reason number 685 to keep or get your children out of the government schools, as we're wont to do quite often. We've got, I'm not sure where this story took place because I just wasn't able to track down. I don't know where Vicky Road is. I don't know what town it's in. But let's assume it's somewhere in America. A 42-year-old male teacher reportedly went to the home of a female student to talk with her father. Well, the female student's father asked the teacher to leave. When the teacher didn't comply with the father's request, the father then struck the teacher with a baseball bat. I said a baseball bat. Now, the teacher sustained minor injuries, but says he does not want to pursue charges. Now, typically, you'd think if someone was hit with a baseball bat that they would want to pursue charges. But this particular teacher does not, because police claim, although they don't know that any laws were broken, they did see enough in a series of texts from the 42-year-old male teacher to the 15-year-old female student to turn matters over to the Crimes Against Children Unit for further investigation. Reason number 685, to get or keep your children out of the government schools, they may receive inappropriate texts from their teachers. And then you may have to take up a baseball bat in defense of the honor of your daughter. And you just don't want to go through that. Who needs that in their life? It's bound to lead to litigation. And nobody needs litigation in their life. Trust me on that. I can assure you of that. Been through it myself. Don't want to go through it again. Wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
That guy's kind of lucky.
Which
he had a gun.
Yeah, the teacher's lucky that the dad didn't have a gun. Yeah, he would have sustained more than minor injuries, and he might be pushing up daisies, as we used to say back in Buffalo. All right, now this could qualify This next story from Breitbart, that last story was from Breitbart as well. This next story could qualify as reason number 686 to keep or get your children out of the government schools, but it ended up in the Sifagana ringworm file. Because if you send your kid to the government school, they may be exposed to one Nicki Minaj. Have we heard of this person?
Yeah.
I've heard the person's name. Did not know what she did for a living. I assume she was some kind of stripper or a tattoo model. I'm not sure. But I can't say her name because it makes me kind of sick. So I'm just going to call her Nicki Manage. I prefer Manage. Anyway, Nicki Manage is some sort of rapper, apparently. And she said in an interview with Rolling Stone magazine that she underwent an abortion as a teenager. And she says, quote, "It has haunted me all my life," unquote. She told Rolling Stone that she thought she was going to die when she found out she was pregnant while she was attending LaGuardia Performing Arts High School out there in New York City. She says, quote, "I was a teenager. It was the hardest thing I've ever gone through." She went on to say, quote, "It'd be contradictory if I said I wasn't pro-choice," unquote. Now, take it. I know it takes a minute. You have to deconstruct that sentence just to try to figure out what she said. And the reason, now I know you people are probably upset that I'm even reporting a story on a rapper. But these people in entertainment, they have a significant influence, especially on the young girls in the government schools, being raised by the texting teachers, and they listen to this kind of music. So they have a tremendous influence over these young people. So I wanted to report what Nicki Minaj had to say about her abortion. She says, "It'd be contradictory if I said I wasn't pro-choice." So I think she's saying she is pro-choice, but her guilt, the guilt and shame that she feels, produces the need for a lot of extra words. Why not just say, "But I'm pro-choice"? Well, because she can't say that, because she feels terrible about the fact that she killed an innocent person just so she could get her on with her career as a stripper and a tattoo model. Now, she does admit, she says this, quote, "I wasn't ready. I didn't have anything to offer a child." And that's a pretty dreadful outlook from a high school student. You don't have anything to offer a child? Well, not being familiar with her career, I don't want to say she doesn't have anything to offer children even today. But I think the only thing she does have to offer children today, is the Sifagana ringworm file is where this story ended up. And I think that's what she has to offer. But she did have something to offer the child. She could have offered the child love, but instead she had the child brutally murdered. She feels terrible about it. But she maintains the fact that she is pro-choice. Why is she pro-choice? Because she did it. She did it, and she never wants to have to apologize for it. And so she maintains a position of pro-choice. This is why abortion is the most insidious crime in the history of all mankind. Is because not only can the devil get you to participate in it, but after that, now then you're an advocate for it. Instead of breaking down in shame and in tears and saying how sorry she was, or is, she just says she's pro-choice. Now, let's report on her new album. She has some quotes about her new album, but they're laced with so much profanity that we're not able to read her own reviews here on The Worldview, because we try to make this, as best we can, a family-friendly show, although the news just isn't family-friendly anymore. She does say, without cursing, she says she wants to show fans a side of herself they haven't seen. With her, maybe that's the side that got the abortion, because nobody had seen that before.
But everybody,
you could pretty much assume that she had killed at least one innocent person and is responsible for the psychological, spiritual, and mental destruction of many, many more. One of her goals with her new album is to give people a glimpse into my personal life, she says. If you glimpse into her personal life, you'll see pustules, lesions, Yeah, and festering sores. That's Nikki Manage's personal life. She says her core mission in life is to inspire young girls. And then she strings together a number of other profanities that I'm sure many young girls would find inspirational. I find them disgusting myself. But she says, quote, "I stand for girls wanting to be sexy and dance," unquote. And then she says some other things that I just can't repeat. So what a legacy that will be for stripper, a tattoo model, and whatever, a rapper, Nikki Manage. A tremendous legacy to be left to the world. She killed an innocent child to get on with her career, inspiring women to want to be sexy and dance. I wouldn't want that on my headstone. No, I don't want that to be my, and that's not my core mission in life. My core mission in life, at least one of them, is to inoculate children against the likes of this Nikki Manage rapper, stripper, tattoo model. All of that. Okay, we'll move on. I know there's certain members of my audience absolutely hate it when I report on the pop culture. But sometimes I feel that I need to report on these things, especially if any of you out there are still sending your kids to the government schools. This is the kind of person that they'd be encouraged to emulate. How do I know that? Because I was encouraged to emulate people like this when I was in the government school, being psychologically warped. Against my will, by the way. I never wanted to go, but I had to go. And I recommend that you get or keep your kids away from Nikki Manage records or interviews or anything like that, because they might need a shot afterwards. All right, now we're going to go into the strange religion file. And this is really strange. It's from the Huffington Post, so you can imagine. The reporter at the HuffPost said, the huffing and puffing on past, as we like to call it, on the verge of bankruptcy. They say there's a problem that animals don't have legal standing to bring lawsuits in their own defense. Their solution is to grant animals legal personhood. They say that's one way the law could recognize animals as living beings with interests or rights of their own. And that's interesting, number one, that anyone at the Huffington Post would posit that as a problem. And number two, that the solution is granting them legal personhood. Now, if you've been following the news on personhood, you know that an Argentina court recently ruled that an orangutan named Sandra now has legal rights as a, quote, non-human person, whatever that means. The orangutan in the Argentina case had been held captive in the Buenos Aires Zoo, where she displayed signs of psychological suffering. And I believe that's probably true. I go to the zoo and I look at animals and I think, you know what? I'm living in the 21st century. We still put animals in a cage? I'm sure that this orangutan suffered psychologically, as I think animals are capable of doing. So that's the problem. Is the zoo is treating this animal terribly. But is the answer personhood? Well, I think not. I think that's a bridge too far. I think maybe social pressure needs to be built up against the zoo there in Buenos Aires to treat their orangutan with some dignity, for crying out loud. But an orangutan is not a person. Now, the Huffington Post author goes on to note that the fact is that American legal history is packed with heated conflicts about whether or not slaves, women, children, Native Americans, and corporations could be considered legal persons. Yes, yes. And then they go on to talk about Stephen Wells of the ALDF, the Animal Legal Defense Foundation, and his ongoing cases to try to win personhood for animals. Hence the name, the Animal Legal Defense Foundation. And if we could ask Stephen Wells of the ALDF, which of these should have personhood rights? Slaves, women, children, Native Americans, corporations? Which ones, Stephen? Well, I believe that he would leave out the children. Well, and the corporations. But the children he would leave out first. How do I know this? Well, the ALDF has an annual meeting. And at Mr. Wells' ALDF gala last year, the speakers list featured a veritable pantheon of pro-abortion leftist speakers, including a former organizer for NARAL Pro-Choice New York, that's the National Abortion Rights Action League, the full-throated, angry abortion activists. He had one of them right up there on his stage, and you probably couldn't have swung a dead orangutan in that room without hitting a pro-abort who was all in favor of personhood for animals. Starting out a little bit slow. I don't know. I probably should have taken a nap after church, after going 15 rounds and trying to sell the house and everything. But Stevie Ray is bound to get things going, kicking things off. We're going to go over to Japan. A story that comes out of our culture file from the Financial Times from Japan. Yes, deaths outnumbered births in Japan last year by the widest margin on records. The population fell by a record quarter of a million people, a little bit more than a quarter of a million people. Births slipped by 2.8%. They slipped to a low of 1 million, only 1 million people born in Japan in 2014. And, of course, the Financial Times reports this story from a financial perspective, which one would expect. They say that the proctocracy in Japan, that's ruled by lawyers, by the way, ruled by the lawyers have basically taken over Western civilization. And maybe it's always been thus, but the lawyers have taken over everywhere, and the proctocracy in Japan is worried about a dwindling pool of workers and growing ranks of pensioners. A lot of old people and very few young people, and the Japanese are extremely resistant to opening up the country to any immigration. And so they're headed for a socialist welfare state collapse, probably in the next 50 years.
50?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. They said that even if the fertility rate in Japan were to rapidly rise to the replacement level by 2030 and then stay there, the population would still keep falling for another 50 years before it would stabilize. And so there's just no turning back financially for the Japanese welfare state. And it's even worse for, young men and young women in Japan. I mean, playing their video games, watching pornography, not wanting to get married, and, that's the death of a civilization. And Japan is a canary in the mine in regards to America, because Japan is like America on steroids. America granted Japan its democratic independence after World War II, and it seems like Japan has been on at hyper speed with all the problems that we have here. Just amplify them by a factor of 10, and you've got Japan. And that's what's going on in Japan. I love the country of Japan. I love the people of Japan. I love a couple specific people from and in Japan. And so it's just sad to see a culture melt down like that. I mean, are the video games that good? Nobody wants to get married anymore. Nobody wants to have children. No, it's not the video games. It's the pornography, I think. And the video games. Yeah, well, it all works together, you know. So one of the other reasons we want to take our children while they're still young and move them out into the country, give them some chores and some animals to take care of. They could even name the animals. You know, that's the first project that God gave to man, was to have Adam name the animals. God brought the animals to Adam to see what he would call them. And then whatever Adam called them, that was their name. And so we'll get the kids out of the suburbs. Get them out in the country. Hopefully we won't all be eaten by wolves. And we'll be able to raise some goats and some chickens. And who knows, maybe even a horse or two. And a good time will be had by all. Hopefully they'll have internet out there. We may move so far out into the sticks that we might not even have internet. I might have to drive into town just to do the Weekly Worldview every week. And frankly, if that's the case, then that's fine with me. It wouldn't bother me all. Well, no, I guess we have to have internet. We'll figure all that out. That we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But for now, let's go to more serious news. We'll go to the war file. Breitbart again, their national security team reports that 2014 saw more global persecution of Christians than any other year in recent history and can only be compared to the first centuries of the Christian faith when Christians were hunted down as criminals in the Roman Empire. Basically, they note that Boko Haram and the Islamic State have a similar ideology to Diocletian. To convert or die is what they tell the Christians. And just a quick review, the Jerusalem Post has spoken of the religious cleansing of the Middle East, including Iraq, Syria, Nigeria, Egypt, Sudan, Somalia, Pakistan. Now, they left out Iraq, but that started under George W. Bush, the ethnic cleansing, the religious cleansing of Christians in Iraq. And it continues to this day with ISIS. But George W. stood by and allowed it to happen, because he never wanted to admit that we were in a religious war, because George W. Bush doesn't really understand religion, except the one that he centers around himself and his family, I think. But yes, let's not leave. Well, they didn't leave Iraq out. They mentioned Iraq first. There you go. They left George W. Bush out, though, is what they did. All right, now, World Affairs magazine notes that this war on Christians is not restricted to Iraq, but is also underway in other countries in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia. Extermination campaigns are being carried out by a multitude of extremist groups against the Christians. And Archbishop Athanasius Toma Dawad of the Syriac Orthodox Church in Iraq describes the systematic persecution of Christians in the Middle East as genocide and ethnic cleansing. He says, "They have burned churches, they have burned very old books, they have damaged our crosses and statues, they are occupying our churches and converting them into mosques." And so it brings to mind George W. Bush standing on that aircraft carrier with the big "Mission Accomplished" banner, and just how complicit we, the Western powers, have been in allowing Islamic fanaticism to fester against our Christian brothers and sisters in the Middle East since the 1990s, really. Go back to George H.W. Bush. And that's what's happening. I got a quote here from a second century father named Tertullian. Now, he famously said that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of Christians, meaning that Christianity thrives under persecution. And this certainly appears to be the case now, as Christianity is flourishing outside the Middle East, as the Islamic maniacs work to stamp out Christianity in its homeland. Christianity does appear to be flourishing in China and Africa and here at the McBurney compound. So no matter what the Islamic maniacs do, Christianity will continue to flourish. As a matter of fact, we go now to the bad religion file. Bad religion being the Chinese Communist Party, which is an officially atheist party. That's a bad religion if there ever was one. Well, the Communist Party boasts 85 million official members there in China. But Breitbart reports that population is now overshadowed by an estimated 100 million Christians in China. And the authorities in Beijing are nervous, and they are cracking down. Yes. Breitbart reports that some predict that China will be the most Christian nation in the world in just another 15 years, with the greatest growth coming outside of the official state-sanctioned churches, the so-called Protestant house churches. And there is something of an underground Catholic church, but the Catholic Church seemed to have struck something of a detente with the Chinese government. China is hoping to restore diplomatic relations with the Catholic Church, and so the Catholics, always being able to work, unfortunately, with dictators and murderers, has not been persecuted to the extent that the house churches have or the Protestant churches. Hundreds of Protestant churches, according to Breitbart, have been targeted for demolition in the past year. We've reported on this. Churches being torn down, crosses being ripped off buildings, pastors being arrested. But the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the Christian faith. So it's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate element of human nature that without persecution, we tend to get fat and lazy and comfortable. And when persecution comes, well, that's when God inspires his people to stand up and do great things and become great figures and great leaders in the world of civilized man, which nothing has revolutionized civilization like Christianity has. I mean, go count the hospitals in your local town and find out how many of them claim some religious affiliation with Jesus Christ. And you'll find that it's the majority, founded by Christians and have had a great civilizing influence on mankind, as have the teachings of Jesus Christ himself and the Apostle Paul and so forth. And speaking of Christians and those who would stomp them out, we're going to go into the bad religion, bad government war file, all of it. Intersects around this group, Boko Haram, a group that I've been calling for the United States to stand up and declare war upon and strike and destroy and kill with the utmost prejudice. Well, ever since I heard about, well, Boko Haram, probably 3-4 years ago, but especially since they kidnapped those girls. As I said, there was an opportunity for a world leader to stand up and take the world stage and teach the world right from wrong. And go in and wipe out Boko Haram. Well, we haven't done it. And so now Boko Haram, well, according to Breitbart again, now you might think I only get my news from Breitbart. This week it appears to be true. But I scour the news sources for all kinds of stuff. And let's see here. Maybe CNN didn't make the cut this week. Breitbart, New York Post, Cafe Mom. What is Cafe Mom? Is that a news source? Washington Post, Fox News with one story, and then Breitbart dominates the rest. Just luck of the draw. But they say Boko Haram, Breitbart reports that Boko Haram, now controls about 20% of Nigeria, about 70,000 square miles of territory, and that's six times the land that's reportedly held by the Islamic State maniacs. They've basically taken over all of northern Nigeria. And they say that Boko Haram is yet to meet an opponent capable of slowing its conquest. Well, that's because they haven't met the United States Marine Corps like they should have quite some time ago. They report that Boko Haram's success has been attributed to its ability to infiltrate Nigeria's institutions, securing ideological allies in the country's Muslim-majority north and taking advantage of the government's widespread corruption. So this is the nexus between bad religion. You've got a majority of Muslims there in the north. And for some reason, even though these Muslims claim to be peaceful and moderate, groups like ISIS and Boko Haram always seem to be able to find sympathizers who help them carry out their evil and wicked deeds. And a lot of it has to do with the widespread corruption of these Muslim governments. And the average man on the street, Muslim, who doesn't even know the Quran and only does his five prayers a day because he'll be shot in the head if he doesn't, well, they're more than happy to help, well, just about anyone who's against the government, who's probably stolen everything they have, including possibly their children. And this is why it's so insidious, and it's imperative that someone stand up and take a lead against these Muslim fanatics before they drive us back into the dark ages. On New Year's Eve, Boko Haram struck the town of Chibok. You remember that? That's where they kidnapped the 300 schoolgirls back in April. Remember? Remember the tweet campaign headed by Barry Ho's M.O.? Remember that? She tweeted, give back our girls, something, bring back our girls. Well, of those 300 schoolgirls that M.O. tweeted about, not a single kidnapped girl has been freed. Some have escaped. And just 2 weeks ago, Boko Haram raided another village near that same Chibok school and kidnapped another 200. And I admit I've been out of the loop a little bit over this past few weeks, but I didn't see a tweet hashtag campaign led by Michelle or any other celebrity or anyone in the government. They just let this nexus of bad religion and bad government continue to metastasize right in front of our faces, right under our noses, on live TV sometimes. And if somebody doesn't stand up and do something, well, it'll be the end of the West. And possibly not the end of Christianity, but the end of many, many of our Christian brothers and sisters.
The devil says.
You know what the devil says? The devil says, Inshallah. That's what the devil says. Yeah. And all the tweets and all the celebrity hand-wringing is not going to change the facts on the ground. Now, the one positive note is that even if the Muslim fanatic terrorist Nazis bring an end to the physical life of our Christian brethren, they won't bring an end to their witness or even their life, really, in the big picture, because they'll be resurrected. And one day they will return with the Lord to make war and rain down hellfire and destruction upon these wicked maniacs. And what a day that will be. What a day that will be. Now, speaking of wicked maniacs, Barry Ho has released 5 more prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. Last week, they were transferred out of Gitmo to the Central Asian nation of Kazakhstan. And, oh well, nothing bad has ever come out of Kazakhstan. I'm sure that the Kazakh government will keep good track of these Muslim terrorists, and they certainly won't have any further impact on the war against Christianity, which is really what Islam is all about. It's a war on Christianity. Well, and of course, anyone else who gets in the way. But when you see their training videos and the targets that they're shooting at or thrusting their scimitars into, they always have a cross on them. So we need to recognize this for what it is. And of course, I have. And I've even suggested a solution. Probably got a lot of Marines laying around the barracks who are ready to go and kill these guys. But I don't know. Barry seems to get along fine. I think Barry has that coexist bumper sticker tattooed on his back. Yeah. His tramp stamp says coexist, says Barry. I think he's going to release all the terrorists. I think I've already made this bold prediction. It's not that bold. He'll release all the terrorists in one of the greatest acts of treachery and treason ever carried out, ever. And he'll do it publicly without any complaint, in front of God and everybody, and the Republicans will bow before him and say, thank you, sir, may we have another. Disgusting. Such brazen disregard for our war dead. From Beirut to today. It's just shocking that he's able to get away with this. But he will be able to get away with it. Because now the face of evil, you don't even have to hide your face anymore. You just come right out like Barry does and do evil and do wicked and do treason and treachery. and nobody can say a word. I think because so much of the rest of the government and the media and the justice system are full of so many wicked, evil people that the pot can't stand to call the kettle black because, well, they're so evil. It's hard for them to call out Barry for being evil. I mean, my guess is John Boehner's heart is so black that he doesn't even recognize the fact that Barry is evil because he's so evil. His heart is orange, you think? Well, I'm not going to go there. I try to avoid ad hominem personal attacks related to people's appearance. I don't know why John Boehner is orange. I don't think it has anything to do with his smoking. I don't think that turns people orange. I think he's just naturally orange because he's slowly turning from Caucasian to yellow. Yeah, and orange is somewhere in between the pink cheeks of a healthy, overfed, fat Republican. Somewhere between that and a total yellow coward is the shade of orange that John Boehner is right now. Yeah. Yeah, did you hear Louie Gohmert is going to run against the orange one for the post of whatever post it is that Boehner holds? What is it, Speaker of the House? Yeah, and I like Louie Gohmert. I got to admit, I like a lot of what he says. I think we agree on an awful lot of issues. But the proctocratic machine will not allow Louie Gohmert to take out their man in Washington, John Boehner. But I'm all for it. All for it, Louie. Go for it, man. In fact, if you could raise up some troops down there in Texas, maybe you could lead an attack out across the Red River and just start heading north until you get to the Potomac. I'm speaking politically, of course, not literally. We don't want to see anything like that happen. But I would love to see Louie Gohmert lead the rebellion against the wicked king. It's fun to dream. But let's come back to Earth because we have to return to news from the proctocracy. Yes. And one of the famous proctors who has had a tremendous amount of influence over the last 50 years in our country is Alan Dershowitz. I first became aware of Alan Dershowitz when he systematically destroyed and defamed the police in the O.J. Simpson trial, specifically Mark Fuhrman. He basically compared Mark Fuhrman to a Nazi guard at Auschwitz. And, you know, Dershowitz is Jewish, so it was particularly effective in what he did against Mark Fuhrman and the other L.A. police who were trying to solve the beheading. The O.J. was cutting off people's heads before it was even fashionable. And Alan Dershowitz was right there to defend him. And if that meant destroying the justice system of the United States and the police department of Los Angeles, Alan Dershowitz was the man to do it, and he did it. You know, the O.J. Simpson trial was really a turning point in my life because I was working in a factory, and we all watched the live verdict on TV. Back then, we had an old cathode ray TV. It was about a foot and a half thick that sat in the back in the design area of the factory where I worked. And we all gathered around. And the moment the verdict was read, I felt like I'd been kicked in the stomach. And I knew that something had changed dramatically in my nation. And that I had to do something more than just go work at a factory. I had to do something. And so I started doing things. You know, starting with burning O.J. Simpson's memorabilia as a way of protest on the steps of the L.A. County Courthouse back in 1999, 98, 99, something like that. Anyway, let's get back to Alan Dershowitz. We reported a few months ago about the accusations against billionaire investor Jeffrey Epstein. Do you remember his name? He's a famous Democrat donor, a friend of Bill Clinton, big friend of Bill, who owned his own private island and apparently held young women there as slaves, even underage women. And there's one particular woman, Jane Doe number 3. Well, she's Jane Doe number 3 now, but she had originally been categorized as Jane Doe number 100 and something because this guy Epstein is a complete pervert, and accusations have been coming forward quite regularly from women whom he held on his private island and basically fed them to, well, big-time Democrats. Well, Jane Doe number three says that law professor Alan Dershowitz and Britain's Prince Andrew and some other people I never heard of, including a French model scout, they all participated in, well, things I can't really describe, but you can well imagine if Bill Clinton was involved, you know what was going on there, right? On the private island of Jeffrey Epstein. Well, she's accused Alan Dershowitz. And Breitbart reports that Dershowitz flatly denied the claims. Here's what he said. Quote, Dershowitz says, quote, "It's totally, unequivocally, and completely false." Unquote. Well, Alan flatly denying the, you wouldn't have needed all those extra adjectives. You would have just said it's false. But Alan said it's totally, unequivocally, and completely false. Now, it could be that he just talks that way because he's a lawyer and he can't help himself. But whenever I see a lot of extra words that are not necessary in a statement like this, I tend to think, yeah, I want to know, did he touch his face while he said that? Did he touch his chin, his nose, or did he rub his forehead? I'm not going to say anything further because Dershowitz could sue me for crying out loud. He's a high-powered lawyer, so I certainly don't want to imply that Alan Dershowitz ever did anything untoward toward anyone ever. But I want to know why he used all these extra adjectives, totally, unequivocally, and completely false. And I want to know if he touched his face when he said it. That's all. We'll just leave it at that. Oh, he goes on to say, regarding these allegations, they are totally made up and totally fabricated from beginning to end. Unquote. How many, there's a lot of extra adjectives in there. So he says they're totally fabricated from beginning. The beginning was made up. The end was made up. And I'm not even going to comment on the middle because the middle, I mean, from beginning to end, it was totally, absolutely, totally, unequivocally, completely made up from beginning to end. Not commenting on the middle. Maybe a savvy lawyer will notice that Mr. Dershowitz left out the middle there. Maybe that's where we need to look, is in the middle of whatever happened, because Dershowitz claims that the beginning and the end were totally fabricated and totally made up. Just in case you weren't sure what totally made up meant, Dershowitz added totally fabricated, just to be sure that everyone understood that these are totally, unequivocally, and completely false allegations. Dershowitz says that he was on the now notorious private island of friend of Bill, Jeffrey Epstein, with his family. Obviously. That's why big-time Democrat donors went to the private island of Jeffrey Epstein. It was to introduce their family to young women being held as slaves on Jeffrey's island. I'm sure that Dershowitz's wife and children had a wonderful time interacting with the young ladies after Bill was done with them. Bill Clinton, that is, yes. So, Dershowitz doesn't stop either. He says, I'm planning to file disbarment charges against the lawyers. I want to sue them for defamation, and I'm challenging this woman to file criminal charges against me. Bring it on. I'm totally, absolutely, unequivocally made up and fabricated from beginning to end. And all that. I think Alan doth protesteth too much, perhaps. Anyway, there you have it. News from the proctocracy. Nothing surprising from Jeffrey Epstein and friends of Bill. And that was another turning point in my life, was the election of Bill Clinton. I was fairly young and naive, and I didn't know much about politics. But I knew that if a person this blatantly evil could be elected as the president of the United States, then this was no longer the country I grew up in, and I just had to do something. don't have time. We don't have time for the lyrics. Just get out of here with that. All right. Who are those guys? Who in the world is that? Man, that's awful. I'm sorry to put you people through that. But Jeffrey Epstein just brings that all to mind. You know, Bill's very popular out there in Hollywood, Beverly Hills, and all that, too. Still to this day, he's now the elder statesman of the Democrat Party, a guy who couldn't control himself with the interns. It's just embarrassing to be an American. So anyway, we'll move on to the domestic tranquility file. The New York Post is reporting that many New York City police officers have started turning a blind eye to some minor crimes. And there's a mandate from the police union there. That's right. So now you've got a purse snatching, a burglary, and the police in New York are considering that minor because, well, if they respond, they might get shot. And they'd rather go home to their wife and kids at night rather than get shot over somebody's car stereo. And that's the state of New York that's been created by de Blasio and the Occupy and the Acorn and the MoveOn.orgs and George Soros and all the rest. Hell-bent on tearing down the structure that has kept America free and peaceful. And the union there in New York, the police union, says that two patrol cars must respond to all police calls, which means, well, it's harder to get two police cars somewhere than one police car. So there's been slower response times to what they're calling non-emergencies. Cop says, I'm not writing any summonses. Someone might shoot me or hit me in the head with an axe, said a policeman. So the police are scared in New York. And I think all across the country, I think police are looking over their shoulder. And that's just not where we need to be, ladies and gentlemen. It's that thin blue line that separates us from a thousand years of darkness. And the thin blue line is being stretched very thin and threatened by the enemies of all that is good and righteous. And it doesn't start with Barack Obama. Actually, it starts mostly with moms and dads. Moms and dads who have abandoned their responsibility to preserve for their children the nation, and instead are squandering everything that their parents and grandparents and our forefathers built in one brief lifetime. It's sad to watch, especially when it comes to the police. It's horrifying. The police commissioner there in New York is predicting a long cold war between Mayor Bill de Blasio and the rank and file in the NYPD. And I can guarantee you Bill de Blasio will never resign. Never. He could be caught with a dead girl or a live boy, and that guy will not resign. He is so evil. And he set up the police. He helped create the environment along with the Sharptons and all the others that I mentioned, all the way up to George Soros. And now the police have actually been attacked, brutalized, a couple of them ambushed and murdered, maybe more that we just don't get the whole story on across the country. The police commissioner in New York says the police feel under attack, including from the federal government at the highest levels. And that is terrifying. I'm sorry. I know we take it for granted that we live in a country that is relatively peaceful day to day. We see these horrifying stories every day. But in our daily lives, as we walk through life, it doesn't seem that horrifying. I had a friend tell me just yesterday that they witnessed a purse snatching, an attempted purse snatching, in front of a Christian store in Aurora, Colorado. Anyway, there is percolating under the surface massive amounts of evil and wickedness. You know, the Bible says that the heart of man is wicked and evil above all things. And so there's been a healthy fear of the law and the police and respect for government and authority that has been eroded so rapidly just over the past few months and years as to put us all in more danger on a day-to-day basis, as well as just speaking from a cultural, historical civilizational perspective. It's very dangerous. A lack of justice. When the criminal does not fear justice, then eventually the criminals will win. Case in point, this is from the Washington Post. We reported on this a while back. Federal prosecutors have decided they will not charge John Hinckley Jr. with murder in the shooting of Ronald Reagan's press secretary, James Brady, who died recently at the age of 73. The medical examiner examined the body of James Brady and said that his death was a direct result of a bullet wound. Yeah. And now we know the bullet was fired over 30 years ago, but the medical examiner determined James Brady wouldn't have died at 73 if it hadn't been for the gunshot. And so John Hinckley should be charged with murder, and he should be executed. Of course, he should have been executed long ago, but at least we had a second shot at doing the right thing with John Hinckley, and the governing officials, the proctocracy, has decided that there's just too much paperwork involved. We've got tea times. We're flying down to Jeffrey Epstein's next week. I mean, we've got a lot going on. Well, prosecutors said that their decision, here's what they said. They said it was based, quote, on a review of applicable law, the history of the case, and the circumstances of Mr. Brady's death, unquote. Now, what does that mean? You didn't tell me what you based your decision on. You just gave me some amorphous references to something legal, some gobbledygook that nobody can understand. But basically, you said you're not going to take up the case because you're a bunch of lazy proctors. You remember, of course, that Hinckley was found not guilty of shooting the president of the United States. He shot the president of the United States in front of God and everybody, and they found him not guilty by reason of insanity. I could see them finding him insane and then killing him judiciously, because people need to be taught a lesson about shooting the president of the United States. And he wounded Brady. You remember Brady was shot in the head. The bullet exploded in his head. He remained incapacitated for the rest of his life. In fact, he became a puppet of the anti-gun crowd because he barely knew that he was awake. And they carted him around in his wheelchair and promoted gun control. It was such a sad thing to see what happened to James Brady. So the proctors say they're not going to take up the case, and Brady's family says that they respect the decision by the U.S. attorney. They, you know, this sickens me about the state of... how could the family say that they respected the decision of the U.S. attorney when their patriarch was murdered? But that's where we are. We're just a bunch of supine, fat, lazy, comfortable... His wife and his whole family have such big fat retirements that they built, carting him around as a gun control tool, that they don't even care that he died. They're willing to accept it and respect the disgusting, vile decision by the U.S. attorney to allow this murder to go unpunished. The family itself, not even anyone in the family can stand up anymore. It's just disgusting and sad. All right, now, let's go to a family that does provide us with some inspiration, the Duggars. So the Duggars, my extremely attractive audio engineer and I, we were having a conversation last night about these reality stars. And basically, we come to the conclusion that reality TV is a construct created by Hollywood elites so that they can videotape people's lives exploding and collapsing. Yeah, like, you remember Honey Boo Boo and that whole thing, how that all ended? Who was it? Who was it? And Kate? John and Kate plus 8. You remember that? These Hollywood parasites just wanted to get the cameras in there so they could watch these people's lives be destroyed by celebrity and wealth and all of that. And, of course, they've had some success with some. What's the latest one we heard about was the polygamists. They have their own TV show. And now they're bringing in another girl. The husband, the patriarch of the family there, he's bringing in another girl, a little younger, a little thinner. And everything's going to be fine, though, right?
Well, we don't know.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen, right? But here's what I can guarantee you. This is not going to end well. and the producers of that show love it. They want to see the human tragedy, and they want to put it out, and they want to plug in their commercials. Well, they haven't had much luck with the Duck Dynasty guys yet, or the Duggars. The Duggars are the 19 kids and counting, 20 kids, 21 kids and counting. And we like the Duggars. Well, the Duggars are shunning an in-law. Shunning. I say the word shun, and 95% of the audience who went to government school, they have to go to their dictionary and look it up. What does it mean to shun? Because nobody gets shunned anymore. That's like using the word shame. Everyone under 30 doesn't even know what the word means anymore. Well, one of the, Susanna, who's the sister of Josh Duggar's wife, Anna, she got pregnant out of wedlock, and then she decided not to marry the father, and so the Duggar family is shunning her. She's no longer welcome on the show, and Jim Bob, who the patriarch of the Duggar family, says no one's allowed to even mention her name on the show. It's as if she doesn't exist because of what she's done. Now, this website, Cafe Mom, I have no idea, ladies and gentlemen, but I got the story. Cafe Mom's, the headline says, Duggars shun relative because of her baby. Yeah. And this is just your typical moronic, publicly educated heathen writing a headline. It's not because of her baby, you ignorant heathen. It's because of her sin. Another word that the folks at Cafe Mom and everywhere, they have to go look that one up. Sin, what is that? They're shunning her because, she's violated well-established rules within the Duggar family. I appreciate the Duggars reintroducing the American public to the concept of shame, that there is shame in going out and getting yourself pregnant and then deciding not to get married. It's just shameful, that's all. And people should know it. And they asked the question at the end of this article there on cafemom.com. Do you think Susanna deserved to be shunned? And that's when everybody started going, looking up. What is shun? What is that? What are they doing to her? They got her tied up or what's the deal? Anyway, so we actually appreciate the Duggars and we think this young girl should be shunned, but not because of her baby. We think she should get married and give her baby the best opportunity to have a good life by having a mother and father as God intended and being raised in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And if a bit of shunning and shaming is what it takes to get it done, well, I think that's worthwhile. All right. Now, let's go to the science. Really? File. The Big Bang is going to be investigated, reports the New York Times. There's a new experiment taking off on a balloon in Antarctica to investigate the Big Bang. Yes, they're investigating the Big Bang. They have six telescopes on a balloon, and the craft is known as SPIDER, for suborbital polarimeter for inflation, dust, and the epoch of reionization. SPIDER. Okay. It's going to circle the continent for the next 20 days there in Antarctica. And it's going to observe radio waves that envelop space and are thought to be the fading remnants of the primordial fireball in which the universe started 13.8 billion years ago. It's so funny because I remember when I was in high school, when I was arguing with my heathen atheist evolutionist science teacher, he said that the universe came into existence. Well, it was like 3 billion when I started, then it was 5 billion by the end, and then they realized the math didn't work. Now it's 13 billion. But they say they're looking for the beginning of the universe. They're looking for the Big Bang, and it's led by physicists from Caltech and Princeton, well known as having taken part in the shimmying and shucking and jiving and fudging of data for well over 50 years, trying to fit Big Bang and inflation into reality. According to this theory known as inflation, these curls in the background microwave radiation would have been caused by violent disruptions of space-time when the universe as we know it began expanding a sliver of a moment after time as we think we understand it began. This is the New York Times reporting. SPIDER is a sister experiment to another Caltech-based collaboration known as BICEP. You remember all those, right? The BICEP said they had recorded these curly cues down at the South Pole, and they said that confirms inflation, and they couldn't whip up a Nobel Prize fast enough for these guys. saying that they had confirmed inflation, which means there is no God. The Big Bang is true. And then another scientist came along and said, wait a second. Wait a minute. Before you start polishing your Nobel Prize, it's quite possible that the differential that you're seeing in the radio waves is caused by space dust. And he pretty much proved that that's what it was. So now they're going to send up Spider to try and prop up their failing theory of inflation again. They say that this time, because they're using two wavelengths, they're going to distinguish between the dust from the primordial space and any other dust that might be out there. They're going to be able to distinguish dust from this, the ripples in space-time, which is a fantastical idea in and of itself. And might I mention that they call the experiment Spider, the suborbital polarimeter for inflation dust, and so they assume the conclusion in the name of the experiment. I don't think you're allowed to do that in real science. I suppose they can say they're looking for inflation, but to actually insert the name into the name of the craft, to me, seems a bit disingenuous, and it should not pass muster in the peer review process, in my humble opinion. Now, the Spider was supposed to complete the first of its two flights last year, but there was a government shutdown, as you all remember. And you know what that means? That's right. We're paying for all this effort to prop up this crackpot theory of not only the Big Bang, but inflation. That's right. You and I are paying these people in order to do it. And that's a little disturbing in and of itself. I don't like that. I don't appreciate having to pay for people to write science fiction. Right? I don't appreciate having to pay for people to lie to generations of children and tell them that the universe exploded out of what can best be defined as nothing. From no one, from nowhere. And then evolution made everything happen. Have you noticed how the atheists and the evolutionists, they always talk about things like natural selection and evolution as if they're people. Evolution did this, evolution chose that. They always have to assign a personality to it because it's irrational to assume that anything other than a person did all this. And of course, I posit that that person was Jesus Christ, the creator and the judge of all the universe, who can also be your savior if you want to escape the fire to come. And if you also just want to have a good relationship with your creator, you should look into Jesus Christ, who he said and what he did. And I encourage you to do that. Now, finally, I saw a Facebook post from a young 20-something friend of mine this past week, and he said, life is boring. And I talked to some friends, and they're just living another version of boredom. It's just a different version of my boredom. It's all so boring. I'm bored. So I posted on his Facebook page, hey, why don't you go fight ISIS? I bet that's not boring. So anyway, and I just posted this next story on his Facebook page today. Dean Parker is a 49-year-old grandfather, a former surf instructor. He has zero military experience, but he heard a report about the helpless Yazidis on Mount Sinjar. And unlike Barack Obama, he heard God's call to go and fight ISIS. Yeah, maybe God's call doesn't carry very well on the golf course, and that's why Barry was unable to respond. Or maybe God just doesn't really even call out to folks like Barry anymore. But here's this guy with no military experience, pushing 50 years old. He's a granddad, and there's an awesome picture of him in basically Kurdish garb, racking an AK-47 against the Muslim terrorists. So any of you kiddos out there, if you're bored, now, there's a lot of things you could do here, closer to home, to serve the Lord and glorify God and to bring some excitement into your life. But you could also go fight ISIS. You won't be bored for a minute. I read the whole story. Never once did Dean Parker say that he was bored. Not once. So if that's plaguing your life, well, there is an alternative. All right. And that's all my time. I've gone a little bit long. We'll be back next week, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. And, I'll be back next week, Lord willing. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.